Welcome to the Perfume Room. My scent of the day today is Wedding in Oaxaca from Kismet Olfactive. Now, if you guys follow Kismet Olfactive on Instagram, or maybe you saw my story this past weekend, you might have seen that the brilliant, wonderful founder of Kismet Olfactive, Shabi Tava Cole, who also happened to be the guest on the one-year anniversary live show of Perfume Room, is about to undergo brain surgery. Shabi is just a ray of light, and her fragrances are a reflection of her brilliance. If you want to support her, there is a GoFundMe, and I will include the link in the notes of this episode. And I also just want to call out that another beautiful way to support our friend right now is by supporting Kismet Olfactive. You know I love her fragrances so much, so I thought I would give you sort of quick five-second reviews of three that have just made their way into my forever favorite list that I love so dearly. Let's start with the delicate beauty that is Nymphaea, which is a soft, dewy aquatic floral that blurs the lines of your skin and the fragrance. It becomes one with the wearer in the most watercolor sheer type of way, and notes of mate, lily of the valley, and lotus are what I smell most. Wedding in Oaxaca, which is what I am currently wearing, is this sort of gently smoky and peppery and slightly piquant fragrance with notes of violet leaf, ginger, gardenia, and osmanthus, all wrapped in this sort of fleshy green coconut. It is a green, musky, enchanting scent. And Tuberose Tantra, this is the most witchy tuberose I have ever worn. It actually conjures a very specific smell for me. This is a very niche reference, but if you have ever gotten a custom occult candle from Enchantments in the East Village, which, hello, you know I have, the oil that they anoint the candles in, this kind of smells like that. It smells magical. If you've been curious about Kismet Olfactive, or perhaps you have samples already and just haven't committed to a full bottle yet, now would be a wonderful time. Shabi, if you are listening, we love you, we support you, and we wish you all the best. Let's get to today's guest. She is an absolute joy and a perfect example of how sometimes if you want to change a rule, you got to be willing to break it. Today we are joined by Kelly Jones, the founder of Kelly Ann Jones, which is a fragrance line inspired entirely by a very faux pas concept, pairing your fragrance with your wine or spirit as a way to maximize the pleasure of both. In fact, it was an embarrassing experience in a tasting room in California that led Kelly to explore this concept even further and ultimately launch her brand. Every fragrance in her collection is inspired by the tasting notes from the corresponding wine varietal or spirit for which it's named, and while beautiful on their own, they are even better when paired alongside said drink. Hear from Kelly about how she transformed her side hustle into her main thing, her experience prior to founding Kelly & Jones, where she worked in the marketing department in the fragrance industry, and of course, how she changed the hearts, minds, and noses of some of the wine industry's toughest critics. And you know that we concluded this episode with a live wine and spirit and fragrance pairing, which if you would like to participate, please do. All you'll need is some Oaky Chardonnay and a little Mezcal. Please be over 21, and please do not operate any heavy machinery or vehicles while participating. This has been a PSA brought to you by Perfume Room. Here is Kelly Jones. Kelly, welcome to the Perfume Room. How are you doing today?
Hi, Emma. I'm so great. I'm really excited to be here with you today. I love how you are bringing this community together. So thank you. It's an honor.
That makes me so happy. I'm so excited to chat with you. I've heard about Kelly and Jones for so long. I had a chance to try Mezcal Añejo in Maison 10 a few weeks ago, and I loved it. And it just reminded me that I needed to connect with you. So here we are, and it's so great. And the first question that I always ask every guest is, what are you wearing today, fragrance-wise?
Well, we are heading into spring. And as you know, one of our core collections is all about Mezcal. I'm a huge Mezcal fan, and I love adding to this collection. So we have a submission that is inspired by a floral take on Mezcal, because usually you think of smoky, peppery notes, but you can really find some beautiful florals in Mezcal. So I'm wearing one submission of that today, and I'm very excited because I'm trekking down to Mexico City next week to go to some flower markets, and I'll be wearing this on my skin and going through the markets and sipping Mezcal just to make sure the notes are really in tune with what I'm sipping on the ground in Mexico.
So the Mexico City trip is it's a business trip then.
It's a serious business trip, Emma.
You have to drink mezcal, you have to smell flowers, and it's all for work. So
that's right. It's a tough job.
Someone's got to do it. Thank you for your service. Would you say that you have a sort of signature scent or signature scent profile?
Well, it all started with the Notes of Chardonnay fragrance many years ago. And that is the one that I always go back to. That's the fragrance that I tend to spritz when I'm stepping out the door, going on a date, or having dinner with family. And it's just so warm and cozy. And again, it's the first fragrance I created. But you know, if I really was thinking about what is the signature scent, it's that scent, but also jumping into a crisp, cold lake during my summers in Michigan. And it's so crazy because there's something about jumping in the cold water and what it does to the perfume on your skin. And so that's a really odd moment for me to bring up, but it is actually when I love the smell of the fragrance the best on my skin.
Wow, Chardonnay in a lake. Again, we got flower markets in Mexico City and Chardonnay in the lakes of Michigan. I'm doing something wrong in my life. I need to reevaluate. I love that. Do you have any fragrance hot takes or controversial opinions?
Ooh, I'm always getting in trouble with fragrance and wine and everything. I would say that it's when someone tells me when I can't wear fragrance. And I know that's really controversial because you shouldn't wear fragrance in the doctor's office or on a crowded airplane or especially in a wine tasting room. But my take on that is fragrance is all around us. So it's everywhere and you never can avoid it. So if you have a little on your skin and you're enjoying it for yourself, then it's part of my wardrobe. It's part of who I am. And so I don't like it when people tell me that I can't wear fragrance somewhere. But it is a controversial rule, and I understand that piece of it, too.
Well, it's a controversial rule that had a lot of impact on the founding and the business behind Kelly and Jones, right? So there's a story about you wearing fragrance in a place you shouldn't, I'm putting that in air quotes, shouldn't have, right? What is the origin story of that wine tasting room experience?
I was in a tasting room up in Napa, California, and this is when I lived out on the West Coast, and I didn't know very much at all about wine, but I knew that I loved to trek into the vineyards and spend a Saturday afternoon with friends in the vineyards sipping and just enjoying the views. And I was in a tasting room, and the winemaker came out, and they were pouring this really beautiful Reserve Chardonnay. And of course, it was this perfect rendition of a California Chardonnay, just perfectly balanced, really sun-kissed. And I was standing at the bar and the winemaker said, "Who's wearing vanilla perfume?" And I immediately thought, oh, I didn't think I put that much on, but I had worn this vanilla fragrance that I was roughly working on from my scent studio. I had it on my wrist and I really got in a little bit of trouble and it was quite embarrassing. But as we were sipping and I had that wine next to my nose and I had the fragrance on my wrist and I thought, this is such an interesting experience. And I'm learning about Chardonnay, which has vanilla, oaked, fruit, the tropical fruity notes. But then I also have that in my perfume and I could just, in my head, all of the wheels were turning about how these two things really went together. And it was right then and there, though, that I learned that you should never wear fragrance when you're tasting wine because it can interfere with the bouquet of the wine and the winemaker's art. And again, I understand where they're coming from with that. You don't want to wear fragrance to a master, you know, you're at the master sommelier or you're at some serious tasting. But it really intrigued me. And that's where it all started, just that those nuances crossing together in the vineyard in California.
So we are going to get back to that because that's like so fascinating to me. And it's so interesting how something that you weren't supposed to do has been the inspiration for basically everything you do. But I want to go back a few steps because you also mentioned that you had been blending something in your scent studio. Were you always working towards creating fragrance? What is your fragrance background?
I think my story is the perfect example of how you can make grand, exciting, marvelous changes in your life, and you don't have to always follow the rules, because I started out in the auto industry. I started out in Detroit and ended up getting a dream job with Toyota. I was a product planner for Toyota, headquartered out in Los Angeles, thus the wine tasting on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And I love cars. I'm a gearhead. I grew up with cars. My dad had a Model A Ford. We went to car shows. So as a kid, you know, I smelled like engine oil and Windex from cleaning the windows at the car shows. Wow. So I worked at Toyota, and I was on the team that launched Toyota in Mexico. It was just such a dream job. And one day, though, I was at a board meeting in Tokyo, and I was there during cherry blossom season, and the cherry blossoms were falling outside out this window, and the meeting was just going on, and I saw these cherry blossoms, and I just thought my whole future kind of flashed in front of me. And I thought, there's so much creativity out there. I really love fragrance, and I want to follow my nose. And I was totally daydreaming in this meeting, and I started drawing these flowers, and it turned into a scent bar idea.
All during the meeting, you were like
during the meeting.
A scent bar.
I was tuning out a little bit, but you know, I got on the plane to go back home, and I just thought, I really want to go do something creative, and I know that it has something to do with my nose. I don't understand why, but something deep down was telling me that, and I didn't know what I didn't know. And that sparked me to create a business plan that was this fragrance bar ideation. And Emma, let me tell you something. When this happened, I had no idea what the fragrance industry was. All I knew was that I had all of these fragrances at home that I loved, and I just wanted to follow my nose, and it turned into an actual scent bar. I moved to Tucson, Arizona, where it was a lower cost to do business, and I opened a fragrance bar where you could mix your own scent and scent your own bath and body products and create your own incense and whatnot. And it was a little apothecary. I had cult favorite skincare. And yeah, Emma, I didn't really know. I was at that time really a self-taught perfumer, and we weren't really doing perfumery. We were just blending oils together, kind of that right. Terra Nova Nectarine aspect of it. But that was my introduction into, oh my gosh, there is this whole world that I have just stepped into, and I have to go find out what all of this is all about.
Amazing to me to just hear that story, and what a doer you are, that you went from daydreaming in a meeting in a conference room in Tokyo to uprooting your life to Arizona and starting a scent bar. And I'm curious, like, I know you were saying, you know, you were more just blending versus like crafting fragrances in the sense that maybe we talk about them on this podcast. Was there a learning curve with that? Like, how did you go from this is a business plan to I'm launching a scent bar?
It really started out with collecting as many fragrance oils as I could. And so just getting out there and ordering the fragrances, getting my nose very familiar with different scents. And it just kind of came naturally to me. This fragrance blends well with this. And I love storytelling. And that's so much of a part of it too. And it was, I really created this intimate atmosphere where you came in and you sat at a bar, just like going out to a wine bar, and you're just sitting, and I'd smell with my customers and friends, and we would blend different scents together. And, you know, again, it was, I didn't know what I didn't know, because as I got deeper into it, I realized, oh, there's regulatory aspects. And, right. And then it was, oh boy, I better really get on this and figure out what I'm doing. And I've never called myself a perfumer, but, then I really realized, wow, the world of perfumery, the art that goes into it, the perfumers are the winemakers of this olfactive world. And the learning curve really got exciting when I was offered a coveted position in the marketing department at Firmenich. And
how did you go from the scent bar in Tucson right? to the marketing department? And I just feel like your life is just so serendipitous, and it's just like the things happen to you. Like, I would love to see your birth chart. I feel like you have a lot of luck and good fortune.
I am so, I feel that way too. I think it's something, I think has something to do with those cherry blossoms.
Yeah.
Emma, I really, magical. I was in the right place at the right time. I was.
Well, that was not to discredit your qualifications.
No, just like this idea, please.
That it all happened, you know, like it's so magical in the way that it unfolded.
It really is magical. And I do think, again, it goes back to the cherry blossoms, because right after that happened, I got a call from the marketing department. I don't know, my resume was out there somewhere. It was the recession and things were getting a little rocky with my store. And mm-hmm. I knew that I probably didn't want to be in a brick and mortar as the economy turned. And I almost took a job back in the auto industry. I was getting offers to go back, and it was really comfortable, would be comfortable and health insurance and everything. But I couldn't do it. And I thought, here's my chance to go to New York. It was a temporary position. And so I was very low on the totem pole. I was just so grateful to have the opportunity. And I got to go in there and meet some of the most amazing perfumers in the world. I loved my position. I worked mainly on consumer product goods. So I got to work with Glade and Reckitt Benckiser and doing some of the household and laundry. And it was so much fun. And then from there, I went to Takasago, again, in the marketing department. And I'm so grateful for that time because it answered so many of those questions that I had in the beginning of everything from regulatory to the composition of a fragrance, to the ingredients, to how to smell and everything. I got to go to smelling sessions and smell with the perfumers, and really another dream job. I was lucky.
I know that that's not what you're doing now, but I am curious because now that we're talking about it, I don't know that I've ever had someone from the marketing department of a big fragrance house on the podcast. What did you do as someone on the marketing team versus, say, what an evaluator would do?
That's such a great question. We worked very closely with the evaluators. In fact, the marketing kind of starts with the marketing department, where you would get a brief and we would put together the fragrance descriptions and the mood boards and, most importantly, the trends behind all of the different fragrance concepts. And we would really keep close tabs on color trends and ingredients and food and flavors and bring that to the evaluators, bring that to the client. And best of all, to the perfumers, to inspire their olfactive creativity. It was really kind of the starting point for the final fragrance.
How did you figure out what the consumer, you know, I mean, now that we have so much like social media and you can go on TikTok and literally look at like which videos are viral, what was it like kind of forecasting trends, I guess, before this like surge of viral content?
Yeah, I can't believe how much it has changed just in the past 5 or so years, because we didn't really even have Instagram when I was on the ground doing all of this. We would work with third-party trend forecasting companies, and we do trend walks through New York City, we'd go to Paris and do a trend walk. And so, for example,
great business trips on the job.
You got to have fun at work, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite ones, we were doing some project. It was Clorox, or it was one of the household consumer goods. And it was like a cleaning product. And so we went into New York City and we were searching for all cues that signified clean. And you can imagine when you're walking through New York City, you don't smell very many things that smell clean. No. But when you're looking for it, it's almost like when you're manifesting something in life, or you're thinking about something and it appears and you start seeing it everywhere. So when you're doing these trend walks and you're looking for a specific theme or a color or a fragrance, and then you see it pop up everywhere and you connect all of the dots. And you turn it into a trend forecast or an inspiration or something brand new and breakthrough.
Wow, that's amazing. It made me think of, tying it back to your car background, like as a kid on road trips, when we'd try and spot like how many cars we'd see that were the same model and the same color of whatever car my parents were driving. Like when you're looking for it, all of a sudden you notice it everywhere. But until this is a dumb anecdote and not as exciting as what you just said, but just this idea that like once you're aware of something, you realize it's everywhere and you could walk through life and never see it.
Emma, it's okay. It's so true. And I have to tell you, this is so much fun. It links back to the cherry blossoms. So okay. As I told you, I found the first one in Japan. I got to New York and I was so lucky. I found this teeny tiny little shoebox of an apartment on Perry Street in the West Village. And I moved everything in. I pulled up the old dusty blinds with all my boxes everywhere. And I pulled the blinds open and there was a cherry blossom outside the window and the petals were falling. I still can't believe that happened. And then when I got to Takasago, Takasago is a Japanese headquartered company. I got to the headquarters there, was so excited for this job. And there are cherry blossoms outside the campus. And the cherry blossom tree just keeps appearing to me at pivotal moments of my life. Yeah. And it's, again, you're looking for it and then you start to expect it and life becomes really an adventure.
Okay, well, going back before we get into Kelly and Jones, just knowing that you sort of got into this because you were inspired by fragrances you grew up wearing, what were you wearing growing up? What were you wearing before you got into this industry?
Well, my favorite fragrance of all time is Lulu by Cacharel, right? Mm-hmm. With all the plum and the tiara, and it's big and loud and 80s. And
yes, and the bottle, it's so fun.
Oh, I love that bottle. And that whole genre, I think, remember Dune? I loved Dune. Mm-hmm. That was a fragrance that I always wore. I had Camp Beverly Hills. That was another fun one. I loved the little chain that came off of the cap. It was during the 90210 days, so it made me feel really cool and with it, very West Coast. Yeah, so I always loved the latest fragrances. Still, when I was in the auto industry or growing up, I always just was looking out for what just launched, what are the new fragrances, what can I smell that will be just so different from what everyone else has.
Okay, so we're on this journey. We have started in the car industry. We've gone to Tokyo. We've seen cherry blossoms. We've come back. We've gone to New York. We've gone to Firmenich. We've gone to Takasago. We've been to the wine tasting where we got scolded. We've also been to the scent bar in Arizona. My God, the journey. At what point did Kelly and Jones come to be? And at what point did you say, this has to be my full-time thing?
Well, I have had Kelly and Jones for quite some time. When I closed my store down in Tucson, I was doing some consulting work in New York already, going back and forth. And I ended up, I had this line on the side when I was working in the industry, but it was my Saturday afternoon thing because I couldn't have this and be working at the fragrance houses at the same time. And I was very respectful of that. And you know, and I always was open about it with the houses. And it just kind of came to a point where I was doing well in the fragrance industry. And of course, it's secure. You have your paycheck and your health insurance. And I could see more and more interest in the wine pairings and the fragrance collection. I had the wine rooms. I didn't have the mezcal yet, of course. But there was just so much buzz about it. And I was getting approached by Wine Enthusiast magazine. And I was getting asked to go to interviews with this wine event. And I thought, you know what? I think I need to go for this because no one else is doing this in this way. And I think that I need to go take the leap. And I'm an entrepreneur. I feel like I like to do my own thing. And it just, kind of got to the point where I thought of obviously I can't do both. And so I decided to go take that leap again. And that's when the greatest things in my life have happened is when I've just said, you know what? I don't have a full plan here, but I have to go follow my nose and take this leap and give it a try. And then when I started putting my full time and my full heart into it, it really took off. And I'm just so glad that I took that chance. And don't get me wrong, I did have months at a time where I was really not in a good financial situation, you know, kind of getting down to the last penny for what I could put into this business. And then it all worked out. But it was not easy.
It's so interesting that you mentioned being approached by Wine Enthusiast and how all these sort of affirmations of your success and what you're supposed to do sort of propelled you in that direction, because you started this podcast talking about what a faux pas it was to be wearing a fragrance at a wine tasting. What do you think it was about Kelly and Jones that made sort of wine snobs, for lack of a better word, decide to come to the other side?
Ooh, Emma, it was so much about not giving up, because when I first created the collection, and of course my first renditions were pretty rough, I got, without even smelling the fragrances, as soon as wine enthusiasts or wine industry people would hear about it, they would say, "Who is doing this? You cannot wear a fragrance in the tasting room. This is horrible." And I actually had one pretty prominent wine blogger do a post that said, "Who is this person who's launching these wine fragrances?" And she was a big name at the time. And I read this post and
At the time.
It was, well, because it was a while ago too, but I read this blog post and my heart sank and I thought, but this means so much to me and I have put so much work into this and I've done so many wine pairings and I've just worked so hard and I can't just have some blogger say that this is a stupid idea. And I wrote back to her. I remember, I don't know if you remember when blogs, you could just kind of write little responses. And I said, yeah. "Hey, this is Kelly. Lee, I understand totally where you're coming from. And I respect the art of the winemaker immensely. But please let me send you a box of these fragrances. After you smell them and you pair them with the wine, you can rip them apart all you want. In fact, I would love your expert opinion." And she said, "Send them on over, fine, da da da." And I did. And a few weeks later, her blog post was, "I can't believe this is really, I get it now. This is on to something. This is something to talk about." And from there, then other wine editors heard about it, other sommeliers. And the next thing you know, I'm talking to Wine Enthusiast Magazine. I'm talking to Food and Wine. We're getting featured in Food and Wine. I'm getting phone calls from the sommelier at the Ritz-Carlton in Laguna Beach.
What a moment. And, oh, you know, God. I have chills just hearing this.
Well, it was, you know what? Thank you. But you know what? It was not giving up. I feel like so many, in life, so many times you give up and you're right on the edge of making it happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can't see what's coming around the corner and just keep going and assume that it is coming, which is kind of what you've carried with you and everything that you've done. It's amazing. And I'm curious, too, if after being at Firmenich and Takasago, if you had a crew of perfumers in your head of who you wanted to collaborate with, because you sort of already had that inside look at who was making the best things on the market.
I can't believe some of the people that I got to meet and the friends I made and the inspiration that I got. I'm very honored that Stephen Claes of Takasago is the perfumer behind our Eau de Mezcal collection. And he and I have sipped Mezcal together and just looked at so much inspiration. He is so talented and gets what I'm doing and is super enthusiastic. And we just laugh and have a blast with it. And then I'm also very blessed and lucky that I have Christina Christie of IFF behind the wine aromas. And Christina is one of my very best wine gal pals. And we have sipped a lot of wine together. And her creations are so beautiful. And I'm so lucky that I have those IFF materials in these fragrances. And they're just kind of get stopped on the street kind of fragrances.
How has the fragrance industry received this idea of fragrances that pair with wine and spirits?
I feel like it's, you know, I feel very supported within the industry, although I'm still very small. I'm really an indie brand. And I think who even knows if these houses even see what I'm doing? I mean, obviously Takasago knows and Christina's team at IFF, but we're still really small. I mean, I've been in Urban Outfitters. You can find us at Macy's online.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm in about 200 stores coast to coast, some in Mexico and some in Canada. So we're growing, but I'm really organic with the growth with the stores that we bring on. I like to just know the owners and know their mission and make sure that the testers are going to be well displayed at their stores mm-hmm. and their that they will know how to sell the fragrance so that they can be successful with it as well.
Well, I feel like naturally the next thing we should do is smell some of these fragrances alongside some wine. Okay, Kelly, for everyone listening, we just took a 5-minute break so we could fill our glasses. We both have a nice oaky Chardonnay in front of us. We both have the same, we didn't even plan this. We have the same Elote Mezcal. So guide me through. What should I do?
Let's start out with our Chardonnay. And Emma, I'm really happy to find a friend who loves oaky, buttery Chardonnay. And I mainly like it because everybody likes to hate on it. And I think it's such an exciting, you can discover so much in a really good glass. Like we're not mm-hmm. talking about the cheap bottles at the bottom of the shelf that are flavored. We're talking about just a really great middle of the road California Chardonnay that is sun-kissed with just beautiful caramel, buttery notes, you know. So let's taste. I think what we should do, what are you sipping on? What is the year of your wine and where is it from?
I am drinking a Lockhart Chardonnay from 2021. It is a California Chard from Buellton, California, if that resonates, means anything to you.
Yes.
What are you drinking?
Buellton is, that's one of my favorite regions. It's in the Central Coast, so it's very close to where they filmed the Sideways movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm sipping on a 2020, it's called a Matchbook Estate Bottled Old Head Chardonnay. And it's got a little burned label on it, representative of the toasted oak of the barrel, because they actually burn the inside of the oak barrel to store the wine, and that imparts more of an oaky flavor. And this is from Dunnigan Hills, another more remote California wine region. It's up, I think it's north of Sacramento, kind of way north of Sonoma. So yeah, I love going into a wine shop and saying, what do you have in terms of buttery, oaky Chardonnay? Because it kind of makes them mad and irritates them a little bit.
Yes.
But then we get into this really great conversation about what is butter, what is oak, and what is an unoaked Chardonnay versus, and it's just, I think there's so much to discover and it gets hated on so much. My goal is to make Chardonnay the next rosé. I want us all to be sipping on it every summer.
I agree. Well, I think it's also, there's so many parallels to the fragrance industry and the way that people turn their noses up. If you go into like a niche perfume shop and you're like, do you have anything that smells like black opium, or do you have anything that smells like cupcake or whatever? There are certain genres that I feel like if they're like super gourmandy, people will turn their nose up. This idea that vanilla is a cheap fragrance is such a misconception. And I feel like the same with Chardonnay. And my little Sideways story that we were talking about is, maybe this was like 10 years ago, but I was in a restaurant with my mom and it was a very nice restaurant on the Upper East Side. And there was a sommelier, and the sommelier came to the table and asked if there was like anything that, you know, he could help us with. And I'm sure my mom like knew what she was talking about and asked for some like red recommendation. This shows how much I know about wine. I'm like, some red.
A red.
And I was like, I'm looking for a really good buttery, oaky Chardonnay. And the sommelier just kind of looked at me and was like, I'll see what we have. And like walked away. And my mom was like, you know, it's like, it's kind of not a thing to like ask in a nice restaurant for a buttery Chardonnay. I'm like, but that's what I want to drink. So if anywhere is going to have a good one, it's going to be this place, right? If there's a California Chardonnay on this menu, it's probably a good one. And she was like, I agree. I like a buttery Chardonnay, but it was something that was so popular in the 80s that it got kind of burned out and people got very over it because it became this sort of like ephemeral big boom trend.
I love this story. That is the cutest story. It's so true.
Why is a taste a trend, right? If you have a tendency for a certain taste, who's going to tell you that that's outdated? It's what you like to consume.
This is, you just really nailed exactly what I'm trying to do with my brand, because I feel like fragrance can be so intimidating and wine can be so intimidating. And in the end, it's about what you want to smell. What are the scent memories that you have in your life that mean something to you, that you look for when you're eating and drinking and smelling a fragrance? And it's so true. There is so much going on in a glass of Chardonnay that links into the whole gourmand genre in mm-hmm. fragrance, and the different levels of vanilla and the different aspects of caramel and oak and mm-hmm. even the woody notes too. Right. Let's talk about
or like how a popcorn accord or something like yes. that. That feels very Chardonnay.
Also all of the tropical fruits that get infused with that vanilla, and it's so much fun. And when I taste, I just like, I don't, this is the other thing. I don't like it when there are rules about what you say that you're smelling in a Chardonnay. You can sit here and say, I smell Play-Doh, or I smell the cookies from my Nana's pantry at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And
right. If you smell it, it's valid. Mm-hmm. It exists if it
it's
exists
so true.
To you.
Exactly. So let's take a sip and sniff. And then what I like to do is I actually like to smell the fragrance a little bit first and get a little whiff of the perfume on my nose. And so with the Chardonnay fragrance, we're smelling notes of American oak. There's a little bit like an heirloom apple, this kind of upstate Catskills fresh pick apple. Orris butter, which is one of my favorite ingredients.
Mine too.
Of course, amber.
Ooh.
And then on the bottom notes, some toasted cedar wood. And then what you can do is swirl the glass of wine.
I love the apple in this.
Yeah. It's a really crisp orchard apple.
Wow. This is so fun. This is like my perfect day. Wine and perfume.
Doesn't get any better. So you can swirl your wine and then mm-hmm. get your nose way down in the glass. And you can see how the nuances are really playing with the fragrance on the blotter.
It really helps to discern. You know, one of the things that I struggle with, even though I feel like I can describe fragrances really well, is when I smell wine, I always second guess myself of like, what notes am I getting? And in some ways, I feel like smelling your fragrances alongside wine, it almost like elucidates what it is that the tasting notes are in the Chardonnay.
You said it. This is such a good way to train your nose for someone in either world.
Because I don't know that I would get apple in this Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a hard time getting the fruitiness. I get more of the butteriness. But when I smell it next to your apple, vanilla, bourbon, orris fragrance, I get that distinct fruitiness.
And go back later this evening and try to sniff the wine without any fragrance around. And then you can see it literally opens up the bouquet of the wine in the glass.
This is a game changer. I'm very into it.
What are you getting in your glass of wine? What aromas are standing out?
I get a butteriness. And I get an oakiness for sure. Less popcorn-y than typical Chardonnays. Like, I've had some Chardonnays that just feel very caramelly and popcorn-y. This one definitely has that like buttery and oaky facet to it. But there's a much more of a crisp fruitiness that I get in this that feels crisp and fresh at the same time.
Oh, that sounds totally luscious.
Watch me like Google the Chardonnay and it's like the worst reviewed chard. And I'm like, I'm getting amazing crisp apple. I have no idea. I didn't look up the reviews of this wine. I truly just picked one that was $13 from California, looked right. And I was like, all right, this is going to be it. But
isn't that what we should be doing with all? Isn't that what we should always be doing, even with fragrance? Because how many times are you also so attracted to fragrance by the bottle? And look, I'm mm-hmm. so guilty of buying a bottle of wine for the cute label. Come on.
Same.
We all like to do that. And right. and I think that it's almost like that blind smelling when you do just go in and you don't think about, everyone who always says out there in the real world, they say, oh, I don't like florals. And then you're showing that almost every fragrance has a floral in it and you're saying you don't like them. And then they say it's their favorite. And I think it can open up a whole new world.
The amount of times people have told me there's a certain note that they hate. And then I ask them what fragrances they like, or I show them some fragrances, and every single one that they gravitate towards is exactly what they said they weren't looking for. And I'm like, just an FYI, every fragrance you liked is indeed the note that you said you didn't. And then they're like, oh, shit.
It's right. They're just looking at me. Even colors can turn us in a certain direction with how we're mm-hmm. perceiving a fragrance.
Okay, well, this is mind-blowing. Should we move on to one of the mezcal scents?
I really would love to taste this Mezcal Vago with you because, lo and behold, we both have a bottle of Mezcal Vago Elote, which is their corn spirit. And I love to pair this with the Mezcal Roja fragrance in the collection. Okay. which has a little bit of a corn silk note in the heart.
And so I should smell the fragrance before the mezcal, yes?
Yeah, let's go ahead and smell the Mezcal Roja. This is our best-selling fragrance. It really has a cult following, and it's been so much fun to see it grow and see Mezcal lovers just always wearing this fragrance. It has a notes of like vetiver. There's a lot of woodiness to it. There's guaiac wood, acote wood, oak barrel. But then I have a really fun story with this one too. I was in Oaxaca working with a Mezcal anthropologist because I wanted to make sure that we are telling the Mezcal story from the ground. It is a very delicate industry, and there's so much family heritage and tradition involved in it that I wanted to go down and make sure that I was bottling that too, bottling their stories. And also a portion of every sale up from the Mezcal collection goes back to a charity in Mexico called Programa Baca. And so we're giving back to the communities there. It's, you know, Mezcal is becoming really trendy and popular, but it's an ancient spirit. It's so mystical. There's so many stories behind it and so many people. It's really important for me to get to have that be part of our mission.
That's amazing. And to be clear for people listening, this is not a scent that's intended to smell like the alcohol that is Mezcal. It's intended to bring out the notes, the tasting notes that you get from that Mezcal, right?
That's absolutely correct. And you don't want to smell like you spilled Mezcal down your shirt. It's the aromas that, again, just like the wine. So I created the Mezcal collection because the wine aromas were taking off and making so much sense that Mezcal is very much like wine. It has an enormous amount of nuance and aroma and interesting flavors because it has so much terroir. There are over 30 different agaves that you can create Mezcal from. Some of them grow up to 50 plus years before they harvest them. And so you're drinking the earth when you're drinking Mezcal. It is such an art. It's so much like wine. I even sometimes think it's more complex than wine. So this one, I feel like the two corn notes really go together. I was really passionate about putting some sort of husky corn elote note into the Mezcal Roja fragrance. And then I also have a cacao blossom note in there, I got off track. I was talking about Oaxaca. When I was down in Oaxaca, I met a chef down there who took me to this amazing Mezcal tasting, and then he paired different dishes with each, and we had so much fun. We were dancing on the rooftop under the moon by the end
of
the night.
Again, a business trip.
And yeah. It was a business trip. It was all business. And we, at the end of the night, we were going through the kitchen, and he pulled out this little chef's tub of blossoms, of these beautiful blossoms. He said, "I want you to have these." And it was dried cacao blossoms that he was using in his dessert. And I was just, my heart, right? I was just over the moon. And I took these back with me and used them as inspiration for that kind of that dried chocolate blossom note that is in the fragrance. So
there's something dusty in this. That's like there's really like a warm, woody dustiness. And it's so sexy. Okay, I'm going to sip my Mezcal and see, because I don't think I'm typically good at identifying notes in Mezcal. I feel like I just drink it. I'm like, it's smoky, but I haven't really ever done a tasting.
Well, there's a trick to sipping Mezcal. You want to just get a little bit of it on the front of your mouth, and then you want to swish it around and keep it in your mouth for a few seconds and let it touch your cheeks. Just let it, you know, don't get a lot in, just sip a little tiny bit and just let it sit in there. And at first it burns, but then all of the flavor starts coming out. And that's really how you want to drink Mezcal. You don't ever want to do a shot of it, or you don't ever want to just take a couple quick sips. You really want to savor it and keep it in your mouth.
For everyone listening, it is 5 o'clock on a Friday. We did it on purpose. We were like, this will double as like a happy hour. And while you were just talking, I just had that Mezcal sitting in my mouth as I was listening to you being like, swish it. And I can appreciate Mezcal. I don't know if personally I'm at a point yet where I can sip it, because that was a little bit hard for me. But
I don't know, would you call it a learning curve? But it does take, just keep with it after a few sips and just try a little bit at a time. Always start with maybe an espadine because those are the least biting. And that will kind of get you used to it. And then one day you'll just say, I'm in love with this. There's so much going on. I'm so intrigued about this whole world.
Okay, so we have one final one, and that is Mezcal Añejo.
Yes. This is our latest launch, and it's a limited edition. It's been just doing so well. I remember
this is the one that I smelled in Maison 10.
Yes, this one you smelled at Maison 10. It's this one is really
it's so good.
I wanted to do something so...
Is there
so,
a pear in this?
Yes, there's a really bitchy golden peach note in this fragrance. It's just that really
peach.
Yummy
I was getting it
fruit.
As like a pear, like a sort of like pear custardy type thing.
Yeah, maybe it's more of a white peach. But then with that... There's also a guajillo chili pepper note, which is a really beautiful pepper. And then the smoked amber, very leathery. There's a velvety, sensual floral note. My inspiration for this was you're walking through Mexico City, sipping a mezcal, and you've got all these nuances from the vibrancy of Mexico City along with the glass of mezcal in your hand. It's very golden and very rich. Definitely the leather is an interesting aspect of it, too.
This is very sexy.
I feel like it's almost
like I know I'm sexy way.
Yes, I get a lot of compliments on this one. I've worn it. You're wearing it at the bar and you know, the bartender will say, oh, my goodness, what is that fragrance you're wearing? And that's very different from getting yelled at in the tasting room.
Right. There you go. Look, you know, it's interesting, too, because as I smell Añejo and I know it's mezcal inspired, but I also feel like this reminds me of a lot of like the fruity floral bouquets that I get in certain white wines as well.
Oh, that's really interesting with all of the peach orchard notes.
Yeah. Like those, there are certain white wines that when I get that like just big, like crisp fruit note.
Right.
I could pair this with a really good like summer wine too.
That would be really fun. Something really, even a sparkler. I think would be interesting to do. Sometimes I get just a little hint, a little nuance of Kenzo Jungle with this fragrance too. I don't know if that comes through for you.
I could see that. I love it. This is so fun. Kelly, this has been so much fun. You have so many more scents in your collection, and obviously for time's sake, we can't go through all of them. So we have one final segment of the show. It is Rapid Fire Scent Association. I will throw out a person, place, emotion, and you just tell me the first smell that comes to mind. Are you ready to play What's That Smell?
What's that smell?
Ooh, I'm ready. I'm so excited.
Kelly, what is the smell of Detroit?
Ooh, tires on the road, engine oil, spark plugs, going to the car show, everything automotive.
Automotive. What is the smell of Tucson?
Oh, it's definitely creosote, which is this beautiful herbal bush that grows out in the wild all through the desert. And when the monsoons come through and when the creosote gets wet, it smells like a wet sidewalk with flowers dropping onto it. I mean, it's like, it's one of the most mesmerizing, incredible fragrances I've ever smelled in my life. And it is the scent of Tucson.
What is the scent of New York City?
Oh, it's Windex and croissant and garbage and pasta and pizza. And I think it's very metallic. I feel like New York has to be the most complex perfume that ever was. And it's also just so many memories, you know, it's that kiss on the corner of Perry Street and the rain. And there's every corner of New York City has a special fragrance
smell.
To me.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I love that it started with Windex because it's a nice full circle from your cleaning. What was it? Your clean walk in
That's
the streets
right.
of New York City. So
That's
we come full circle. That's what stuck. That's what came out first. What is the smell of your childhood home?
Ooh, I was born in Montana. And it's a place that I love to go back to. And it is the smell of the coldest air you could ever imagine that is so crisp and clean and little hints of fir and pine and just super clean and icy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the smell of love?
Oh, wow. I think I love this. I think it would be the smell of spontaneity and adventure, and definitely something that has, you know, I think maybe most people might say it would be musk or powdery or skin-like. And I'm going to say it's like fireworks. It's like burning sparks and, you know, that fireworks smell?
Yeah, just sparky, a little, yeah, little sparkiness.
Right. Let's make it exciting.
The final question is, what is the smell of Kelly and Jones?
I think it would be definitely a little hint of mezcal. It would be the scent of getting out of the lake on an early Sunday morning, just fresh water. And I think a little bit of engine exhaust or something that would take you to the racetrack.
Mezcal, very complex. Fresh lake, racetrack. Kelly, it has been such a joy chatting with you, sipping with you, smelling with you. For everybody listening who would like to get their hands and noses on Kelly and Jones fragrances, where do you recommend they start?
You can always go to our website, which is kellyandjones.com. We are on Instagram at kellyandjones, and I'm dabbling with TikTok, so we are at the same address there. And I love to connect with our friends and customers. So whenever someone reaches out to me directly with a little wine tasting note or inspiration, just bring it. I love to chat and connect in that way.
Amazing. Kelly, it has been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Emma. This is really fun. I hope you finish that glass of wine.
Perfume Room was edited by Wyatt Peake. Music is by Max Vernon, and illustrations are by Israel Rodriguez.